The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
There's an old movie you should watch if you haven't seen it. It's called Seven, all right? The question was, what's in the box? The answer in this Seven was, the Suns were in the box. Chris Paul was in the box. Devin Booker in the box. A Seven like we've never seen before. And if that wasn't enough, the many other faces of Seven. Basketball games, duds. Hockey games were bonkers. And can you imagine being a panelist from Dallas on this Game 7 weekend? Let's go around the horn.
No, I can never imagine. You never want to imagine.
You acquitted yourself very well, Jim Callis.
Seven-star Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman.
What's in the box? What's in the box?
I love it.
Sort of a dream come true for some.
There's a question I say for these special games when the banter is going to be especially spicy. I say, what happened? And I say it like that for emphasis. Last night deserves more. How did this happen? How did a Game 7 turn into that when it was Game 7, home number one seed down 30? We had never been like that before in NBA history. Then it was 40, and we had never been like that before in NBA history. When it was Luka staring down everybody, we had seen that before, but never like this. No one ever thinks about what happens should the Sun implode, because we're all done should that happen. But the Suns imploding, Chris Paul disintegrating before our eyes, Tim Kalishaw in Dallas. How did that happen?
Well, you know, here's what happened. I'll tell you that first. And Chris Paul did disappear after game two. And it's not like a normal great player who just suddenly, you know, goes 4-for-17 and misses shots. He didn't take shots. He didn't pass the ball. He didn't get assists. He stopped moving. And if you think about the first series, Jose Alvarado bothering him, that's an undersized, undrafted rookie. So the Mavericks said, what if we put somebody bigger with more talent like Reggie Bullock and Dorian Finney-Smith on him, and they shut him down. And if you watched Phoenix's offense the last two games, it was whatever Devin Booker could create because they had nothing else going on. And Booker, for his part, once Dallas turned up the heat on him, 12 turnovers in the last two games, couldn't shoot early last night. No one can explain the margin of victory, but you could see it coming once Dallas said, we're going to focus on Booker because Paul's got nothing left, and it turned out to be right.
Our panelist in Dallas says no one could explain. Well, let's see if someone could. Bill Plaschke, around the horn to you.
Well, first off, Tim, I want to offer my services to you. You're not used to working this late in the year. I understand that. I'm here for you to help you cover the playoffs, to help you go into June. You've never worked. You haven't worked in June in 20 years. I'm here for you to help you out with that. But, no, Dallas is great. But Doncic is not Michael Jordan yet. Jason Kidd's not James Naismith. This is a lot with Phoenix. Phoenix just quit. Something's wrong. Something went on. Maybe they bristled under the hard rule of Chris Paul. Maybe they tired out. But Chris Paul was done. Booker followed suit. Ayton didn't play hard. They didn't play aggressive. That team is a mess. Something's wrong. There's something there that we're not hearing yet that we will hear about what went on. And look what Ayton fighting with Monty Williams on the bench. Who gets in a fight with their coach in Game 7?
Oh, when it starts out the way it does,
Dallas
maybe.
Great. Something's wrong with the Suns.
Kevin Blackstone, how did this happen?
You know, it's extremely inexplicable for the reasons that Bill just laid out. And I don't know that Luka's not Michael Jordan, maybe not yet, but he's certainly the Michael Jordan of Slovenia right now. But, you know, until they lost a game in this series, the Suns had beaten the Mavericks 11 consecutive games. Yeah. So what the heck happened between now and then? Sure, you make Chris Paul disappear because you immobilize him, you play on his size, but it seems like to me then coaching comes into play here, and you make the adjustments so that Chris Paul's size and maybe his lack of explosiveness at this point in his career is not so exposed. And you figure out how maybe to not better defend Luka, but how to defend all the perimeter players. I mean, just just a few games ago, this was a 30-point swing on the court with the Suns, with the Mavericks being on the right. other end. So it is incredibly baffling to me. And Bill's absolutely right. Something happened. And for there to be an argument in Game 7 with everything on the line for the team that arguably was the best all season yeah. long, wire to wire in the NBA, and not put him back in a crucial situation like that, something needs to be explained.
David Dennis Jr.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about how great Luka was, and he was, but if you scored 0 points, we're still looking at a tie game at the end of regulation. This is about the Suns, and most specifically, like, I don't want to go full Pat Bev here, but this is right on Chris Uh-oh. Paul's feet. Chris, I mean, we could talk, he was 30, yes, he's 37, 9 points, 3.6 turnovers since turning 37, but this is the entirety of his career. Chris Paul has never won an elimination game after the first round, which means that either his body or his mentality or whatever is breaking down late in the playoffs and is unreliable. This just keeps happening. And with the most concerning thing from Chris Paul's game last night, fourth quarter, 5 minutes played, 3 for 3, 7 points, 2 assists. It looked like the guy was stat padding down 40, which only adds to how inexplicable last night's performance was.
Okay, all right, all right. Well, so you're putting it all on Chris Paul. More on this then, because Kevin, you brought it up. Suns for 6 months of the year, they were unanimous the best team in the league, and through two games in the series, it was still a championship team. So I want you to say what you said when we sat down, Kevin, about Chris Paul. You called him, and this is also invoking Patrick Beverly, you said his career is over.
I mean, that's what it looked like to me. It looked like to me he turned 37 and somebody hit the light switch and it's over. I mean, how do you come back? Obviously, Chris Paul doesn't want to go out like this, but look at the numbers. I mean, they are staggering. He was an absolute non-factor. In fact, not only was he a non-factor, I would say he was a factor in the Mavs being able to put the pedal to the metal in the manner that they did.
I'm going to read what Chris Paul said after the game. Quote, "We'll be right back next year. I'll tell you that much." End quote. David Dennis Jr., how do you even plan this summer for Phoenix? What do they need to do to get back to the team, again, that they were just 5 games ago?
That team is gone. That team is no longer. They have to figure out a new, you know, era for Chris Paul. Limit his minutes, have him do spot minutes, maybe come in. Like, he can dominate some fourth quarters if he doesn't play a lot, but the West is different next year. Kawhi's coming back. Denver's going to look better. Ja's going to get better. The Warriors are going to be totally healthy. I don't know where the Suns fit
Lakers
in, and
better.
They do not look like a top team.
I heard Plashke there for a second. He deserves a mute, and he's getting pushed back to as far away as we could put him right now. Tim Kalishaw, what happened in the last 5 days then? That's two panelists who are saying the Suns are done. I am shocked to hear this.
Well, you know, the thing about that 30-point game in Game 5, that 30-point win, that was a one-point game early in the third quarter. And Dallas had this weird run of 10 straight possessions where they didn't score a point. And Phoenix built that to a 17-point lead. And that game should have been a much closer game because Paul wasn't really being a factor in that game until the score got out of hand. And then, again, we're putting it on him because he is the leader. Excuse me, he's the leader of that team. They follow his lead. And when he starts out a game like Game 6, no shots taken in the first quarter, no assists, no rebounds. Yeah. No, nothing.
But talk to me about roster construction for this team in the summer.
Well, they got to figure out what to do with Ayton. I think Ayton's problem is a contractual problem, and I think that's why he was much better in the playoffs last year. He was really good in most of the playoffs till Monty told him to go guard Giannis. He didn't have a better plan for the finals than that. You know, I think some of this is on Monty Williams. He's coach of the year, but he's had a really hard time adjusting when a series starts getting away from him.
Bill, has the window closed on the Phoenix Suns?
As they're constituted, yes. Chris Paul has lost four consecutive Game 7s. Think about that. He wears down. He can't be their leader anymore. Ayton's not working out. I say they let Ayton walk. They push Chris Paul to a subservient role, and they build around Devin Booker. Mm-hmm. It has to change. Mm-hmm. You can't put this team that we saw last night out there on the floor next year. You just can't.
And now Tim Kalishaw gets to work into late May and even June on the basketball court.
What's with all these flights and things? What's this all about? I don't get all this.
We'll have more on the Mavericks later in the week. We'll move on. The Game 7, that was merely 28 points. Celtics just went to another gear in the second quarter, and it was gone. Actually, it was gone once Tatum went off in Game 6, really. how Boston has put it all together has been a 5-month-long discussion. So while you address whether they've fully arrived, one last question on this series with Giannis sideline now and the defending champs going out, Kevin. Does this series go differently if the Bucks have Chris Middleton, or are the Celtics now at a point where this is all them?
Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from the Celtics. I will praise them later. But clearly, Game 7, this is how far Milwaukee got, how far Giannis dragged them without Chris Middleton, arguably the most underrated all-star in the NBA through omission, right? And I think that if he's on that team, he's good for at least one W, and I think they get by. But I don't want to take anything away from the Celtics, and I'm going to praise them later on.
I don't want to take anything away, but if the other team had their guy, they would have lost this series and been in shambles. David Dennis Jr., how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Like, we look at Game 7, and we look at the barrage of threes and think it was just an offensive, you know, victory for the Celtics. The Bucks were 82 points for 100 possessions in Game 7. Middleton makes a huge difference. The Bucks were 27% from three for the whole series. That's where they need Middleton. Need him in the fourth quarter. You know, Giannis and Holiday looked gassed. They needed somebody else, and I think he would have, you know, he would have made a huge difference, but would have also made a difference if they tried to win the last game of the regular season so they could have Game 7 at home.
Okay. Tim Kalishaw?
I mean, I suspect it would have been a different series. Chris Middleton is an all-star. There's only 12 all-stars in each conference. Those are important players, but that doesn't mean the Celtics couldn't have stepped up. They won Game 6 by 13. They won Game 7 by 28. Maybe they don't win by those margins, but I'm not going to take the victory away from them.
And Bill Plaschke.
Boston made 53 more three-pointers than Milwaukee, the biggest disparity in three-pointers in NBA playoff history. Who shoots three-pointers for the Bucks? Who's their outside shooter? Chris Middleton. He wasn't there. Case closed. The Bucks would have won this with Chris Middleton.
Kevin, you gave us an incredible tease that you were going to praise the Celtics later on. I guess now the floor is yours for, later ladies on, and gentlemen, Kevin Blackstone praising the Celtics.
Because I don't want people to doubt the Celtics. Look at the type of defense that they played, particularly since January.
I don't think anybody's
look
doubting the Celtics.
No, it's not. But let me, I will say this one more thing about Chris Middleton that people don't realize. He gets his own shot, too. And that's something else that the Milwaukee
looking
Bucks
forward. Tomorrow game one already. I mean, we're going to, and Marcus Smart may be questionable for Boston, but who's the favorite going in? I know what you're going to say, Kevin Blackstone. Praise the Celtics, please.
Please.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure, actually. David Dennis Jr., who's the favorite going in?
I'm saying Boston.
Kalishaw.
Miami.
And fans. Bill.
The Heat.
Let's go.
He should win.
Fire cell next.
More dead.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Horn brought to you by Chase, coming to you from the Seaport District at Pier 17.
Panarin, right wing circle, shoots, he scores!
Volcanic eruption at Madison Square Garden last night. Panarin's overtime series winner. Not only how the Rangers came back from 3-1 down in the series, but also how they came back in every game of the comeback. It's a comeback centipede, Bill Plaschke. Do the Rangers win it, or do the Penguins blow it?
Oh, the Rangers won this, Tony, because in the penultimate game, I'm sorry, in the ultimate game, in the final game, Shesterkin, the league's best goalie, 42 saves, the league's fourth best power play, gets a game-winning goal. They earned it.
Tim Kalishaw?
I think if the Rangers won it, it's good to see Panarin, the bread man, finally coming through with
a big goal
there. They were behind in game five. They were behind in game six. They were behind in game seven. They won all those games. Give the Rangers the credit. Mm-hmm.
David Dennis Jr.?
Yeah, I agree. I think we should be a little bit kinder when teams blow 3-1 leads in general. But I think that, yeah, this was all about Shesterkin and what he did. Nice. And, you know, being the best player in the series. 2.39 goals above saves expected. Mm-hmm. Just once he got his head in the series, this was all about him. And the Rangers became the better team.
Kevin Blackstone.
You know what? No one was crying for the Washington Capitals because Tom Wilson couldn't finish out the series down here, having a career year. So now I'm going to cry for the Penguins because they lost their goalie, because Crosby went down in Game 5, couldn't play Game 6, and still they couldn't eke out one win in three overtimes? Are you kidding me? Somebody break through and step up and play for the Penguins.
Man.
They blew it.
Bitter. Wow. Get the Penguins. Bitter, KB.
Kind of liked it. We'll move on. That somebody had to go home in Tampa, Toronto, the reality, but that is excruciating. And that it was Toronto, seemingly faded, but equally excruciating. Never underestimate the heart of a champion, back-to-back defending champion Lightning. For Toronto, though, a last word on that.
We got a lot of respect in that line from their team. It was a much different tone, a much different feeling of respect on the other side from what we've experienced previously. We're certainly earning respect in the league, but again, we're not in the respect game, we're in the winning game, so.
Mm-hmm. So a different tone, a lot of respect, Tim Kalishaw, the most respectful first round exit in a game seven ever, maybe. But what do you buy, what do you sell from that in Toronto?
I'm buying the handshake line. I think it's one of the greatest things in sports. But I'm selling that anybody in Toronto, people have been waiting since the 60s for this team to win another title, cares about the respect Tampa showed. If they want them to win, there were five game sevens. Only one home team failed to win, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
David Dennis Jr.
Yeah, I'm selling the idea of like this super extra respectful handshake line. First of all, there's bad losses, but there's no shame in losing to Tampa Bay. They won 9 series in a row. It's been a few years they've lost any. But this idea that you go and like have super duper respectful handshake, they're doing the Will Smith dap or whatever. Like, what is a super more respectful handshake look like?
I think it means that
I don't understand it.
There was a feeling that Toronto could have won this series if they weren't up against the back-to-back defending champs, and that they're breaking through in some way without getting through the first round. Kevin, do you see it that way?
Well, the breakthrough would have been to break through, which would have been to move on to the next series. And to Tim's point, 1967 was the last time Toronto won the Stanley Cup. The NHL, the Hockey Hall of Fame, for goodness sakes, is in Toronto, kind of symbolizing that as a birthplace of professional hockey. So that's not good enough. No, absolutely
and
not.
And Bill Plaschke.
Yeah, this was in the end tone deaf. He meant well, but Toronto's the first franchise in history in basketball, football, and baseball to lose in hockey to lose five straight winner-take-all games in the playoffs. Five straight years they've lost winner-take-all games in the playoffs. No, that's not respect. You don't need respect.
No, Kevin, you passed on the opportunity to give an Adonde line. Remember Adonde said on the show, in order to win games, you have to win games? In order to break through, you have to break through. We'll move on. Buy or sell three to baseball. No hits allowed, but you lose the game. I mean, that is so Cincinnati Reds this year. It's happened 5 times in the last 120 years, by the way, to have a no-hitter and lose. This one makes it 6. Hunter Green for 7 1/3. And then Art Warren, no hits. But the walks caught up to them. Fielder's choice was the only run in a 1-0 loss to Pittsburgh. Hunter Green threw a career high 118 pitches. His previous high was 100. Kevin, what you buying, what you selling?
I'm selling the way that they're using Hunter Green. This guy has a possibility of being a face of baseball going forward. He was on the cover of SI, for goodness sakes, for his great exploits as a high school player playing in the development league coming out of Compton. Do not ruin this young pitcher by having him throwing that many baseballs.
Bill Plaschke.
I'm buying it. I'm the only columnist here on this panel who was at the last time this happened in 2008. The Angels no-hit the Dodgers and lost the game. I called that a nah-hitter. This was another nah-hitter.
All right, hold on a second. Stop the show. Let's make a ruling. Thumbs up or thumbs down on Plaschke's nah-hitter.
That's good. It's good. Admit it. It's
great. Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting that. Okay. And you also covered the only panelist in the show, I believe, who covered Hunter Green in high school. Right, Bill?
Yes, I saw him. I didn't cover him, but I saw him pitch in high school. Mm-hmm. And he was, and to go 118 pitches is unconscionable. You never should have left him in.
Oh, Tim Kalish. Okay, Tim, please give it to me.
Let's have him throw 80 pitches and give him a participation ribbon and send him to the dugout. He threw 100 pitches when he didn't get out of the sixth. He threw 95 when he didn't get out of the fifth. Those are higher stress performances than 118 into the eighth. He's going to survive. He's going to be okay.
And David Garcia.
Selling 118 pitches. You have one job, protect your future, and they did not do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Blackstone, you voted up for nah hitter, and Plaschke with that little bonus passed you.
But then you let Kalishaw get away. He watched David Clyde throw his arm out as a teenager down in Texas.
Wow, after the horn there. Blackstone getting in a shot at Kalishaw. All right, I'll allow that. A couple points off Kalishaw's scoring average. No doubt. Next, Bill, Tim.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It was 15-2 in the ninth inning when the Cardinals brought in a closer, making his first career appearance. Look at how much everybody loved Albert Pujols pitching. This is just incredible. His career, right? Not incredible now. It's 36. He let up 4 runs. Bill Plaschke, Tim Kalishaw, welcome to Showdown. This is your kind of fun in baseball, right? Bill?
I love this, absolutely. My favorite part of the season so far, that a great player, one of the greatest players ever, would be willing to embarrass himself to have fun in the ninth inning. Good for him. Mm-hmm. Good for Al.
I think it's got to be fun for him. 2 home runs. It's got to be the closest he's come to that in about 7 years. So in one game.
Oh, how dare you.
Whoa. Pujols.
Part of me wants to just, I think I will reward Kalishaw.
Out of nowhere.
For just a vicious take. We'll move on. A first pitch you don't get to throw. The Japanese ambassador to the United States was supposed to throw at the first pitch, but Max Scherzer was already on the mound warming up, and nobody's going to ask him to go. You would think the ambassador might have diplomatic immunity and might be able to do something here. Tim, are you going to be the one to tell Scherzer he's going to stop throwing?
This looks like a Seinfeld episode. The catcher should tell him. There's other Mets there. He can say, hey, step aside. Max Scherzer has seen guys throw the first pitch.
Bill Plaschke.
Nothing new.
Scherzer should have done what he did for the Dodgers in game 6 of last year's NLCS. He should have tapped out.
Wow. I wasn't following what year you were going there. This is the most vicious FaceTime ever. A point for you, Plaschke, but Kalishaw's getting the time.
Mm.
Whoa.
That's usually how this one goes. Hey, until last night, the Stars and Mavericks had never even played a game 7 in the same season. Last night, they played them at the same time, an hour and a half time difference. You know what the Mavericks did? Stars could have followed up 64 saves going into overtime for Jake Oettinger. He should have been a winner. Not to mention Jordan Spieth with Byron Nelson, our other local legend. 25 under par, how did he not win? Should have been a hat trick. Spieth, Mavs, Stars.
That's a terrible FaceTime.